live from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, the Total Education Show, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators. Here's your host of the show, Neil Haley, the Total Tutor.
We're back to the Total Education Celebrity Show on the Total Education Network. Again, TotalTutor.net for more information. Twitter, Total Tutor, Neil S. Haley, Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley, Instagram, Total Tutor, and an Olympic athlete from Sochi, and Katie Tsuyuki. Katie, thanks for calling.
Oh, thank you so much, Neil, for having me on your show.
Oh, I'm excited to talk to you. And again, the experience in Sochi must have been phenomenal, especially being an Olympian and representing your country.
Oh, yeah, it was really amazing. You know, everyone asks me how it went, and, you know, amazing is the first word that comes to mind. They did an awesome job of putting on the show.
I really enjoyed it, for sure, and it was a great Olympics, for sure. But let's go into how you got involved in the half pipe. When you were a kid, did you always enjoy, I guess, being in Canada, you enjoyed growing up being in the snow and skiing and certain things. Was this something that you liked doing, skiing a lot in your life when you were younger?
You know, being in such a winter nation, you would think that that would be the case. But for me, it was a little bit different. I actually come from like a water ski wakeboard background. And, you know, I didn't really think about the Olympics. I thought more about being on top of the SeaWorld water ski pyramid when I was a kid. So it's definitely a little bit different. You know, I didn't really get into snowboarding until I was around 17, 18, when I realized that there was more support behind that sport than a sport like wakeboarding, just because it was recognized in the Olympics. So it wasn't until kind of much later, you know, I was in my 20s when I competed in my first World Cup. So it's something that just came to the realization that it was possible and totally tangible for me.
So then once you finally found something you enjoyed, you went after it. Did you know that you had the talent to do it from when you started, you think?
I knew that I had the work ethic, and I knew that, you know, I had the talent through other board sports that I've done. You know, the most confusing part, though, of it was kind of the process of, you know, how you get on the national team and how you get World Cup starts. Information wasn't as available as it is now to get those positions. So that was probably the biggest challenge for me when I was making my way up through the World Cup, you know, from a national level to a World Cup level.
It definitely seems like that's something that the process of just looking at and saying, am I talented enough? I know I have the work ethic, but am I going to be able to compete at the Olympic level? So basically, once you started to win or compete well, you knew that this is going to be something that is going to be a career of yours. When did you kind of finally see this is something that you're going to be able to train hard and spend a lot of time doing?
I wasn't until a couple years out of 2010, so I guess, you know, 2008, 2009, that I really sort of buckled down and, you know, became really serious and kind of started looking for more private ways of getting myself to the games. I was on the national team for a good long while, but, you know, it's a national team. They have a lot on their plate, and sometimes athletes fall through the cracks. And unfortunately, I was one of those athletes. So, you know, after not making it and being a forerunner in 2010, I was an alternate, and then I went on to be a forerunner. I really sort of took the bull by the horns and decided to kind of make my own program with the people who I knew were going to support me in the right ways. And so I hired my own coach and did all my own private fundraising to allow me to go to the games. And, you know, I ended up qualifying, you know, pretty much almost top Canadian into the game. So it really paid off to kind of take matters into my own hands. And I really felt like I owned my experience going into the games. So that was really important to me.
So hiring your own coach, raising your own money, that's got to be tough, especially if you have to work something else to go out and get sponsors and make sure that you could pay a coach and spend the amount of time training. Was that difficult for you to go out and reach out to people for funding?
Yeah, you know, being an athlete, you really want to be sort of, you know, you're proud people. It's hard to go and ask people for money to support you, but it's an important thing that you need to do, and it's something that I needed to get over, so that was kind of hard. But, you know, once you start putting your word out there and, you know, having all these fundraising events, you really realize the type of community that you have around you. You know, I'm lucky enough that our family has a business of 50 years, so, you know, we have kind of like our client base behind us that can come out and help. And, you know, I have amazing friends and family that came and volunteered their time. You know, even when I wasn't there, you know, if I had World Cups or something, they still put on events to support me. And, you know, you really have to, you know, get together with your community and your family to make things happen. And, you know, you got to check, cash in those one-time checks, right? Like, people who kind of maybe not really owe you, but, you know, you might've helped them out. You know, that's the time to ask them to kind of step out to the plate and help you out. But it's amazing what people will do when you ask. And, you know, my motto is the worst that they could say is no. So, you know, I basically asked everybody to lend a helping hand.
And they saw that you're going to represent Canada, you're a hardworking person, and they wanted to see you do well and get the opportunity to go to the Olympics. And being half pipe, was this the first year of half pipe? Am I correct? Was this the first year that was an Olympic sport?
Snowboarding half pipe has been in the game since Nagano, since 98. Okay. This was the first year that they allowed ski and also slope style for ski and snowboard into the Olympics. So, you know, half pipe has been around for a good long while. You said you had Kelly Clark on your show. Well, she's gone to pretty much every single Olympic games for snowboarding half pipe there is. So, you know, and she's 30 years old. She started I think she won Salt Lake when she was 16. So, you know, it has been around for a good long while.
So quite interesting. So kind of defining all those things. And then you told me you guys are like the redheaded stepchild because you miss out where the money came, which was the X Games. But do you get to compete against all the other tours and different events with the U.S. and different things? Like, will you go and compete in some of the things that really draw a lot of money, not just the X Games for a competition?
Oh, yeah, like a lot of TTR events. There's two kind of competitive circles. One of them is the FIS, which most people are familiar with because they kind of own the rights to govern over the Olympic snowboarding. And then the other one is the TTR, the Ticket to Ride. And that's kind of set up more by solely snowboarders. So, you know, TTR kind of has some of the bigger, more popular media popular events, whereas FIS has the World Cup events, you know, which are a little bit different. But yeah, you know, once you qualify on a world level, a lot of times you're invited or allowed to go to whatever event there is. The X Games is the only invitation only. Well, there was the Dew Tour too, but you know, that went off of your ranking more so than kind of a committee that sits down and decides, you know, who's going to be invited to the event. So, you know, I compete and I train alongside Kelly and Caitlin Farrington, who won gold this year, you know, and Hannah Teeter and all the big Americans. Like, snowboarding is a really small community and, you know, everyone is super nice to each other and willing to help each other out in any way, which, you know, might be a little different than the race component. You know, that's the great thing about freestyle is that, you know, at the end of the day, a lot of the times we are cheering on our friends and we want to see everybody do well to progress the sport and, you know, see what's coming up next.
And that's really interesting, Katie, in so many ways when you talk about you guys as a community. For sure. And I was going to say it's such exciting sports. I call it all X Games because that's how we kind of define it in the U.S., except for the Olympics, that these are ex-athletes, you know, the X Games type athletes. But there's really a lot of money to make in this sport because of the audiences that come watch this, right? This is the other thing about when you're going out trying to get sponsorship or funding. It's not as difficult than other athletic events because it draws so well at the different events and competitions, doesn't it? Because people love watching this, don't they?
Yeah, you know, like, that's funny that you say that you can make a lot of money in this. But I guess compared to other events,
yes, definitely,
like
yeah,
maybe track yeah, or, you know, bobsled or things like that where, you know, it's not as like, I don't want to use the word cool, but a stereotype going, yeah, it might not be as cool or known to the public, or maybe it's just not as tangible because, you know, maybe those things are something that the public doesn't go and do, whereas snowboarding and skiing, you know, anyone can go to their local mountain at any time and get on the slopes and kind of have that feeling. So maybe they feel like they can connect more with the athletes, you know, but at the end of the day, we're still just athletes and you know, only the top 5% really make like a solid living to go on, you know, so other athletes, they need to find other ways. We really have to be multifaceted to go out there and like make an income for ourselves doing what we really love.
You got to have a lot of sponsors, if anything, and also be able to work your way through that.
Yeah, process, you know, do anything from public speaking to writing for magazines, you know, to going out and maybe mentoring or coaching other athletes. Like, you know, you got to be willing to try or do, you know, anything to make it happen for yourself. But that's, you know, honestly, like that's just any small business as well. Being athletics or, you know, you have your own construction company or something. That's just something that you have to be willing to do to, you know, grow.
Okay, when we get back, more with Katie Suwicki, and we're going to go right into the interesting process of Sochi, but I have a couple more questions regarding some of the other things that she's doing, especially, I guess, your family business and all these different things that led you to Sochi and the experience there and the great work you're doing with kids. You're listening to the Total Education Celebrity Show on the Total Education Network, and we'll be back in just a moment. We're back to Total Education Celebrity Show on the Total Education Network. Again, toldtutor.net for more information. Twitter, Told Tutor, Neil S. Haley, Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley, Instagram, Total Tutor. And I'm with Katie Suwicki, and we're having a really interesting conversation. She's a Canadian Olympian halfpipe snowboarder, and we're having a really interesting conversation about, I guess, the sport and understanding how you are able to get to Sochi. When you talked about specifically enough, I mean, not just the talent, you got to raise the money. Your family business, what is that family business? Tell me about that.
We're one of the first Sony dealers in Canada. It's a family business. We're celebrating our 50th year this year. And my grandfather started. We're third generation. You know, my grandfather came out of an internment camp. We're a Japanese background. Came out of an internment camp and opened up this little shop. And it's evolved, you know, to be, you know, multi-million dollar business that it is now. And, you know, expanded our shop and things like that. So, you know, it's really something that I grew up with. And sales and marketing and things like that are in me.
So that helps. That definitely helps when you're going out and raising money. For sure. To understand that, you know, you learned at an early age about how brand awareness, how to promote a product, all that stuff, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so finally you raise the money and then you get you qualify for the Olympics. So take us from there, getting the opportunity to go to the Olympics. How excited were you when you were chosen and you knew you were going there?
Well, I kind of have a unique story. So, like I said before, I have a private coach, Crispin Lipscomb, and he's actually a 2006 Olympian. And, you know, he had some things go on in his life where he kind of went into recluse mode. And then I kind of pulled him out of it about 2 years ago to get him to come and coach me. So, you know, I was told by Canada Snowboard that I wasn't going to be allowed to have my own private coach up at the top of the pipe. And that's when I kind of turned to Crispin and I was like, look, Crispin, you're good enough to do this. You're going to qualify. And he kind of gave me like the aru sort of look when I said that to him. But, you know, I planted the seed, it grew, and he ended up qualifying with me. So when I got the call saying that I was on the team, it wasn't really real to me until I called Crispin and I was like, well, did you make it too? And, you know, as soon as he was like, yeah, I made it, then, you know, that was quite emotional for me. And you know, to have one of my good friends and mentors and, you know, then coaches to be able to come to the games with me. So, you know, that was amazing. Like us getting our jackets and being called to the team and, you know, going to our training camp in Switzerland. Pre-Olympic, you know, and at that time we were kind of training each other. Cause when I told them that he had to go, he said, well, who's going to coach me? I go, well, I'm going to coach you. So we had a real unique situation at the games. You know, whereas the national team coach at that time, he understood what our roles to each other were. So he really let us kind of go with it and coach each other through it. And so it, that kind of made things extra special because I was able to do it my own way, which I guess not a lot of athletes are able to do that. When it comes to the Olympics, there are a lot of rules that are in place, you know, for a good reason. But you know, I kind of tweaked them a bit to have my own story. So that was really special to me. I made the games really good.
Absolutely. So the experience of being in Russia, have you ever been to Russia before?
Yeah, we were there for a test event in February. So, you know, to get us familiar with the course, because they had never had any World Cups or anything happen there. So we got familiar with the lay of the land and the course and, you know, the food and what to expect and things like that. So, you know, it's good to have a warm-up before we go to the big game.
So once you get there, Katie, and you're at the event and you're it's so real with all the coverage, right? It must be amazing. And then finally the Olympics are here, not when you first went out there, but the second time. It must have been crazy there, right? All the different things happening, all the Olympians everywhere and the coverage and everything.
For sure. It was, I don't want to say overwhelming, but it was really amazing just to see all the athletes, you know, even just to go to the gym and see all the athletes train, like sort of cross train, you know, it's cool to see all the different programs and the body types and things like that. And just kind of guessing which athlete goes into which sport and you know, eating with everybody. Personally, I had a rule where at lunchtime I made myself eat with somebody who I didn't know just to get to know more people on Team Canada and other people from other countries and ask them questions about their sports and things like that. You know, that's how I kind of expanded on my own Olympic experience. But it's such an amazing feeling being there and seeing everybody in their team colors and the houses decorated with eggs. And of course, like seeing my Canada house decorated in my flag. And, you know, Canada's kind of known to have these moose that are everywhere. And we had our own moose, Team Canada moose that was out front. It was really cool.
It seems definitely like it. Now, what was your biggest surprise there, in your opinion?
I guess my biggest surprise was how things ran so smoothly. You know, the media did a great job of scaring everybody.
And yes, I'm sure, yes.
And spectators off and you know, having everyone kind of on the edge of the seat of like, oh, when's something going to happen? But, you know, nothing happened. Things were really well organized and you know, everyone felt comfortable the whole time. So I think that was important for the athletes and for the spectators. So that was a little bit surprising.
So you were thinking, oh, my gosh, every time we're going to, you know, be searched and it's going to be and we're going to hear about terrorism everywhere and everything went fine. And you never know if that was a plant in a lot of ways so that Putin's Olympics would be a failure. When and ultimately, it sounds like you were treated really well there.
Yeah. You know, it's they got, you know, Putin, I'm sure, did things that weren't always awesome, but it got kind of a bad rap to start with. But, you know, he did a good job making sure that everyone felt safe and, you know, everyone had a good time.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, if you saw it from the coverage of the U.S., because I know I've seen Canadian coverage of the Olympics because when I was a pro wrestler, I was touring in Canada. I guess it was about 15 years ago when the Olympics were in Canada. I forget how many years ago it was, but I remembered how much coverage, 24 hours a day, not like the U.S. on the major channels. I mean, the Olympics is a bigger thing for sure in Canada than the United States, the Winter Olympics, because that's your sport. That's your Olympics for sure. So you definitely build a celebrity status in so many ways, being a representative in Canada when the Olympics are the end all be all. Would you agree, next to hockey in the country?
Yeah, you know, my Twitter followers went from 400 and something to over 1,000 within a couple days. And, you know, that's pretty crazy to see, like, you get verified and things like that. And my social media was just going off. You know, I felt really bad for not being able to keep up with everything. But, of course, I had my event to focus on and, you know, being at the games and representing my country. But Yeah, I guess you could say that I reached somewhat celebrity status within a very short period of time. But, you know, the question always is, how long is that going to last for, right? Like, you think back on other games and you're like, oh, who was that athlete again?
Six months, Katie.
yeah, for sure. So you got to ride the wave while you can and, you know, make yourself as memorable as you can, of course.
Well, it's interesting. I interview a lot of track athletes who are pretty big. They got gold medals or silver medals in the U.S., and they're able to keep themselves relevant. It's just staying connected with those people who followed you, constantly providing content for them, and you'll be shocked. You'll be like, oh my gosh, I can keep it going. So the last question before we go into your work with kids, are you planning on the next Olympics in 4 years to be part of them?
Well, to be completely honest with you here, Neil, I'm 32. You know, I'm a little bit on the older side of the scale. You know, I'm not at all doubting my abilities to do it, but I've already kind of dedicated, you know, a solid 10 years of my life to this. And although my dad, every time I see him, I don't even have to say anything. He just looks at me and he goes, Korea 2018. And I'm just like, Dad, like, you know, relax sort of thing. But yeah, I just got to see what's going to go on in my life. And, you know, if I want to do other things like pursue coaching or pursue my public speaking or, you know, maybe like have kids or something, you know, I really got to see. But you know, the Olympics is a bug, and once it gets in you, you know, it's real hard to shake.
Oh, absolutely. Well, I didn't know your age, and when I saw you on Skype, I said, you don't look 32, so you look a lot younger than 32 for sure. So I didn't expect that you'd tell me that. I thought you were definitely in your 20s. So, Katie, the big thing is then, again, giving back. Your success as an Olympian, your success in life of maintaining and having an opportunity to do so many great things, you see how important giving back is. Isn't that, Kate, that's so important to you?
Oh, yeah, it's really important to me. You know, I'm really passionate about snowboarding and sport and everything that it encompasses. And I look at a lot of younger kids these days, and I see that that's kind of something that might be lacking in their lives. You know, it doesn't have to be passion in snowboarding or sport or anything. That's the great thing about passion, is that it goes well beyond that into the arts, into scholastics, you know, into basically anything that anyone finds interesting. So I kind of put together this workshop that I do with 18 and under kids, although I've had lots of older people come up to me and tell me that they love my workshop. And it's just about finding passion in their lives. And, you know, the one sort of message that I try and convey is that if you find passion in your work, then you'll never actually be working.
Exactly. My job, I don't feel like I'm working at all. Anyone says, are you going to go back to be a teacher? No, I'm going to stay an entrepreneur. I'm going to have my radio network. I'm going to have my media company, and I'm going to have my tutoring consulting company, and I'll be my own boss. Forget the 9-to-5 deal. I've drill, or forget getting in the classroom and having the Monday through Friday 182 day drill. I like this. Hey, it doesn't feel like work. Monday morning, I wake up. It's another day. It's not like...
Exactly. And so, you know, like my Olympic experience in sport is very, you know, important to me to use an example to these kids. But I have other friends who are chefs, who are models, you know, who are teachers that I use in my presentation to show that it's not, like I said before, it's not just about sport. It's just about finding that thing that you love and, you know, developing it into work that you know, you can do, see yourself doing every day. And, you know, it's a really important message to these kids, because I don't think that it's that talking about passion and, you know, allowing the kids to believe that they can do things that they love doing. I don't think that message is very prevalent in schools these days. So it's nice to have, you know, me come in kind of on a supplementary level and, you know, give the kids that confidence of like, hey, you know what, go out and find, you know, be a dreamer, find things that you love doing. And, you know, it's okay to go out for them, you know. And of course, with that message, I always underline it with, it's never going to be easy, or it's not easy thing to do. And, you know, people might try and put you down. But, you know, as long as you're not harming yourself or anybody else, there's always a way to find passion and make it work for you through work ethic and education and, you know, going out into your community and finding mentors. you know, and kind of making it happen for yourself, just like how I had to do, and lots of other people.
So life after sports, I had to talk about this in a lot of ways, Katie. You said kind of you might not be competing 4 years from now. What's your game plan? I talk to professional athletes about this all the time, especially, and I guess the connection with Annette is kind of funny, especially she was an Australian Olympian, so I'm going, I guess, globally when it comes to Olympians now, but I've had a lot of NFL athletes on, a lot of them, that a lot of people don't figure out what they're going to do afterwards. I could tell you I have a feeling you have a plan, but for our listeners, what is your plan?
Right now, coming out of the games, I have a lot of offers on the table, and I really kind of have to sit down and narrow it down to see what's going to work when, at what time in my life within the next, you know, 10, 15 years. And, you know, something that's really jumping out at me is that I was offered a traveling coach job with one of my friends who has a really good snowboarding program. And I think that's a really good fit for me just because, you know, I've done the travel thing. I've done the travel thing, and you know, everything like that interests me. I have a lot of things on the table in front of me. It's just kind of nailing things down within the next 10 or 15 years.
Well, and I'm sure you have more time to decide. More opportunities are going to come your way, Katie. And never give up on that Olympic dream again, for sure. But I think that you could definitely capitalize from this and be able to help transform people's lives and choose your passion, what makes you passionate, and live life, for sure. And I think that those are fantastic messages. So, Katie, where can we find information on you and learn more about you?
Well, I have a website. It's KT. Those are my initials, just the letter K and the letter T, athletics.com. And there's all news on me and what's going on. And if a teacher or somebody's interested in having me come in and speak about passion to their school, then information on that is there too. And of course, all social media. My Instagram is KT_athletics. My Twitter handle is KT_Tsuyuki. Tsuyuki, but all of those links are all available on my website, and that makes things a little bit easier. So KT, my initials KT, ktathletics.com is my main website that you can get pretty much any information on me.
All right, well, best of luck. I hope to have the opportunity to talk to you again, especially you update me when your latest projects or anything new, and definitely need to start having more Canadian Olympians on the show, especially because my show is international. So good talking to you, Katie, and best of luck.
Thank you so much, Neil. I really enjoyed being on the show.
It was a lot of fun. You're listening to Toll Education Celebrity Show on the Toll Education Network, and we'll be back in just a moment. We're back to the Toll Education Celebrity Show on the Toll Education Network again. TollTutor.net for more information. Twitter, TollTutor. Neil S. Haley. Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley. Instagram, Total Tutor. And always excited in the Celebrity Show when we talk about NFL players and the illustrious Hall of Famers. I tell you, I've had two NFL Hall of Famers on before, but this guy is fantastic, and he's doing such fantastic things in the community. So I want to welcome the program from the Purple People Eaters, the Minnesota Vikings Hall of Famer from 1967 and 1981. He played in the NFL, Alan Page, and I'm going to call you Justice Page. Justice Page, thanks for calling, and it's an honor to have you on the show.
Well, thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
Absolutely. So for our audience out there that might not know your illustrious career, tell us a little bit about your background, then we're going to get right into your foundation.
Well, as you noted, I played professional football from 1967 through 1981, 11 and a half years with the Minnesota Vikings and another 3.5 with the Chicago Bears. I have an undergraduate degree from the University of Notre Dame. I grew up in Canton, Ohio, practiced law for a while, and for the last little over 21 years have been serving on the Minnesota Supreme Court. I've had the privilege to serve on the Minnesota Supreme Court.
Well, and I think that's where it comes down to why you value education, Justice Page. And we've talked about lots of life after football for NFL players. And, you know, and your career, guys really were smart, you know, that when they're, because you guys weren't making as much money as the players today, definitely a lot less. You really focused on careers. You did, on the off season, you did internships, you did different things to make different connections. I talked to Rocky Blyer about this. I've talked to Dwayne Woodruff about this and all these different things. And they basically have told me, and then other athletes as well from Andy Russell, that, you know, you have to, have a different, you had a different mindset when playing in those days, that you definitely were going to have to, you couldn't just live on your salary that you made during your career. You have to kind of have that as a stepping stone to life after football. Isn't that true, Justice Page?
Well, that's part of it. But in my case, I was pretty fortunate because I had, at least in my own mind's eye, I had a life before I started playing football. And there were things that I, as a child growing up, was looking forward to doing as an adult. And one of those things was the practice of law. I had that as a vision long before playing football ever occurred to me. So that once I started playing football, I had that, still had that in the back of my mind. And indeed, that was as much a motivator as anything. Because, you know, even today's players, I mean, it doesn't really matter how much money you make. At some point, your football career is going to end, and you're going to have a life after that, a life that's far longer, generally, than the football life. And I just can't imagine sitting around with nothing to do, and certainly with nothing productive to do. And so for me, getting my law degree and preparing for the future for that time when the football career ended was critically important. And it should be important for today's players, again, no matter how much money they make.
It's so true. And I think that's where we're going to go right into this value of education. Being an education talk show, starting before I really got into the whole celebrity thing, still do the education thing for sure and have authors as well. I've just learned so much about how important foundations are to help our education system. We're struggling in certain areas, especially inner cities, for education. I would say in the United States, I'm not going to have the outlook that some people say that our public education system is broken and needs fixed. Certain areas of our education system needs fixed. But tell us a little bit about why you started the Page Education Foundation.
Well, it's been 26 years ago now that my wife Diane and I sat down and talked about trying to figure out what we could do to change the course of people's lives. What, you know, we've been fortunate both on and off the athletic field, and it seemed to us that when you're that fortunate, you have to make some contribution to those who come after you. And so actually it started the idea, the specific idea for starting the foundation, started the night that I found out that I was going to be inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. We sat down and with some friends and talked about how we could make it even more meaningful than simply recognition for past accomplishments. And we came up with the idea of an education foundation. And the reason for education was really, from the time I started playing football, I got put on a pedestal, if you will, and would be asked to talk to young children about the importance of education and all that. And coupled with growing up in Canton, Ohio, at a time when there were a lot of great football players who performed just phenomenally on the athletic field, but when they're high school or college playing days were over, they ended up back in Canton hanging out in the street corner.
Yeah.
That didn't make any sense to me, even as a youngster. And ultimately, I concluded that what we were seeing was an academic problem, not an athletic problem. And so it was a natural for me to gravitate towards in terms of trying to make a contribution to those who come after me and after us, make a contribution in the area of education. And so we sat down that night with some friends and talked about what we might be able to do. We came up with the idea of a foundation that encouraged, motivated, and would assist young men and women of color pursue their education beyond high school. And as you alluded to, the problem of the education gap in our inner cities with young men and women of color is just staggering.
Yes.
And we thought we would try to do something about that by, as I say, encouraging, motivating, and assisting. And we do that two ways. One, by providing financial assistance for young people who want to pursue their education beyond high school. Indeed, our goal is to encourage young people to pursue their education beyond high school. And for those we select, our grant recipients, we call them paid scholars. We require them to go back into the community where they come from or back into the community where they go to school to work with young children kindergarten through eighth grade, specifically in the area of education, as tutors, mentors, and role models. And by their service to young children, they become really shining examples for those young children of somebody using education as a tool to achieve their hopes and dreams. And in addition, for the scholars, they benefit from having made a contribution and had an impact on some young person's life. And we're pretty proud of the 6,000-plus young men and women who have served as Page Scholars. You know, they go to schools, we're local in the sense that all of our students are Minnesota students going to Minnesota schools, but they go to some, I think this year we have scholars in some 49 different post-secondary academic institutions across Minnesota, from trade schools to the University of Minnesota to St. Olaf's and Carleton College, you know, some of the best private schools in the country. And everything in between.
That's great.
Our scholars are they range from the best and the brightest to those who maybe have struggled along the way. You know, not everybody wants to or needs to be a lawyer or a doctor, although we have some of those. But we also have the students who, you know, who maybe didn't think they could do it, but got accepted someplace, and we're trying to encourage them just as much as we encourage those students at the top of the class.
Justice Page, that's fantastic, and I want to touch upon the great summary of your program, and I'm very impressed, and I'm sure with your education background and especially being a justice that you've really put time and effort into this foundation because you're doing it right. You're hands-on with your wife in this idea. You see well, that the specifics. Go ahead.
I was just going to say our goal is to, you know, create the scholarships and have the scholars do the work with young children. And that's all we're interested in. We're not, you know, we don't need the pat on the back, although it's never a bad thing to get it.
Yes.
But it's not about us.
It's about
those young people and their future and ultimately the future of our country.
But you're making the change, Justice Page, and this is what you're doing. You're taking the kids that are working the hardest or really want to go on to the school after high school, and then you're saying, well, to get one of these scholarships, you have to give back in this community. You have to go to your community and give back wherever you're attending school or wherever in the Minnesota area so that they truly can take whatever degree or whatever job or career or trade they choose and then understand the importance of with their family life growing up, how they're going to be able to do it in their community to help others to see the value of education. And by putting them in the K through eight environment, what it does, Justice Page, is it gives them that really, they grow up very fast being a mentor, getting to work with kids.
Absolutely.
Transforms lives. It truly does.
It absolutely does. And, the foundation has a motto, creating heroes through education and service. And every one of our scholars is a hero to me. You know, we talk about athletic heroes and all of that, and that's fine. But the real heroes are those people across this state and across this country who are changing the lives of other people for the better. And so we're pretty excited about the work that our foundation does.
Well, we're talking to Alan Page from the Purple People Eaters Hall of Famer about his foundation, the Page Education Foundation. And Justice Page, I've talked to many people about foundations that are athletes and celebrities, but you have it. You got it right. You have the model. That model works, and I think it would work in anything involving mentorship. Mentorship changes both the mentor and the mentee, and that if we can do this, even in our public education systems, the model that your foundation does across the country with other athletes, foundations, or celebrities, or just everyday foundations, then the people who get these scholarships are going to remember to come back and help. Because go ahead. What were you going to say?
I was going to say, absolutely. One of the things that surprised me over the years is the number of our scholars who started off their post-secondary education either not knowing what they would end up doing or not, or having a specific area in mind. And because of their involvement in working with young children as tutors and mentors, end up working as a lifetime goal, working with young people, either as teachers, as teachers, or as social workers, or what have you, but all because they were involved as paid scholars working with young children.
Well, you have the model, and I'm sure April 5th is just a very unbelievable day for you, 26th anniversary of your foundation. Did you think that it was going to be as life-changing when you first started this to be sitting here now talking to me 26 years later and see how many lives you've changed?
You know, we had no idea. We thought, you know, if we could, that first year, if we could raise $100,000, we could have a tremendous impact. And, you know, that was 26 years ago. That first year we ended up with 10 paid scholars. This year we've got 502. And as I say, over the years we've had in excess of 6,000. We couldn't have begun to imagine the impact that our scholars have had or that our foundation has had.
I'm sure you have a lot of people to thank through this whole 26-year journey. Are there anybody that that have been really with you from the beginning that you would like to thank? I know for sure your wife, for sure on the foundation, but anyone else as well?
Well, she has been critical to the success. She's the one that for the past 20 years since I've been serving on the court has ensured that the foundation is financially stable. Because of my role in the court, I can't be involved and am not involved in the fundraising that the foundation does. And she's just worked tirelessly. But we've also had, we have a pretty lean operation. There are, we have four employees, and I think even with the four individuals, all of them aren't working full-time. So the workload is tremendous. If you could imagine keeping track of 500 young people.
Yes.
At any one time.
Definitely.
It's a significant challenge. And so our staff has been, we couldn't be happier over the years. We couldn't be more pleased with the people that have supported us.
That's awesome for sure, and best of luck to continue the success of the foundation for a long time to come. One thing I would say to you, Justice Page, is if you could take this in a bottle and put this in many different cities across the country, this type of model, it would be fantastic for sure.
It's a model that works and would work anywhere. You know, and our formula is pretty simple. But it takes a lot of effort. We've had one or two occasions where others have either talked about or tried to take our model and use it in other places, and for whatever reason, it hasn't worked out. It really does take a significant commitment, and you can't just sit down and say this is going to happen. You have to sit down and make it happen, and you have to make it happen every day. It's a lot like playing football, if you will, because you can go out and play one day, but that day is over and you've got to go out and play again the next day. And it's the same way with this. I think people tend to think that once you get it going, it'll take care of itself. It won't take care of itself.
Definitely.
It has to be nurtured and worked with. And we've been fortunate enough to be able to do that.
Well, you definitely have. Really like to have you back on the show, especially if you have other events you're promoting or other projects or updates on some of the success of your foundation with the kids and stories. Definitely like to have you back in a couple months to reach out to you and see how things are going. But I mean, best of luck again on April 5th, and you're doing tremendous stuff. And when I do talk to other foundations, because I talk to lots of NFL players and different celebrities that have foundations, if they have an education one, I'll definitely share this model with them. Because this model absolutely works.
Absolutely, and if there's somebody that, you know, wants to contact us and talk about it, we'll be happy to talk with them.
Okay, so where can we find information on your foundation, Justice Page, and learn more about you as well?
It's our website is page-ed.org, page-ed.org. And if all else fails, just Google Alan Page, and the foundation is generally the first thing that pops up.
Oh, that's the most important thing for sure. I really enjoyed talking to you, and just really enthused by talking to a celebrity athlete who's doing great things and has an education model that works. And I really believe that. I believe that we need to have these mentor tutors all over the place in every school, working with kids especially that are almost close to the same age, one-on-one, because that's where the success is going to come in the classroom. It's not going to come from 30, 35 kids and one teacher for sure.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, thanks, Lynn, for calling, Justice.
Great. Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye. You're listening to Toll Education Celebrity Show on the Toll Education Network, and we'll be back in just a moment. We're back to the Toll Education Celebrity Show on the Toll Education Network. Again, tolltutor.net for more information. Twitter, Toll Tutor, Neil S. Haley. Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley. Instagram, Total Tutor. And always enjoy interviewing NFL players, especially that are giving back to the community. So I'm so excited to welcome the program Dallas Cowboy Dwayne Harris. Dwayne, thanks for calling, and how are you doing today?
I'm doing good. How you doing?
Fantastic. Tell our audience a little bit about your background, then we're going to get right into basically before your career, how you got involved in football, your family life, and how you're helping give back right now.
I'm from Atlanta, Georgia, right outside of Atlanta, a city called Decatur. I started getting into football when I was probably around about 4 years old. Everyone in my family always played football. We always played every sport, actually. And my two brothers, like a younger brother and an older brother, you know, we always did everything together, you know. So it was real competitive. And then I just loved football ever since I picked the football up, man. Ever since then, I just been playing it.
Absolutely, and you see the love of it, and people, I'm sure, helped you in your journey to the NFL, didn't they?
Oh, yeah, definitely. There was a lot of people. I couldn't even say and name all the people who actually helped me get to where I am right now. I'd be all night. Definitely a lot of people definitely helped me get to where I am. And I'm very humble for that and very thankful.
Well, absolutely. It's something where you finally get your childhood dream. You're an NFL player and all these different things. Did you always think you could be it? Is it something that was your dream and you said, I'm not going to give up until I get that dream?
Yeah, there was a lot of the people who would say I wouldn't be able to make it to the NFL just because I was small and I wasn't fast enough or all the other things people say that try to guide you from getting to where you want to be in life. And I always told people that's what I wanted to do and that's what I want to do. I never had nobody try to stop me, nobody bring me down. Football was one of the things I wanted to do. And get to be in the NFL and live my dream of playing in the NFL. So I never let anybody tell me I couldn't do it.
And that's great. And you had people that you said that helped you that keep you going and focused, because you could get down on yourself when people say, "Hey, you're too small. You're not fast enough to be in the NFL. You might as well just give it up and go on into something else." And you just kept saying, "I am not going to give up. I'm going to keep persevering." Correct?
Yes, most definitely.
And then you made it, and there you go. And then seeing that your career so far in the NFL, you've had a successful career, and you continue to play at a high level, you said to yourself, I also got to look at all the people that helped me. You told me you'd be on the phone forever, Dwayne, if you would tell me all the people that have helped you through the way, so you know how important it is to give back, isn't it, Dwayne?
Oh, yeah, most definitely. I definitely always try to give back. Anytime I can. If anybody asks me to do anything that has anything involving your children, kids, teenagers, and I'm always willing to go out my way, make room, clear my schedule to do anything for those kids. So I feel like, you know, when I was growing up, we didn't have people like, you know, myself who played in the NFL and come back to the community and talk to them. And I showed them that people still care. You know, you can do whatever you want to do in life. You know, and not even if you're just playing in the NFL, you want to be a teacher, a doctor, lawyer, or whatever it may be. You know, it's just always come back. It's always good to have people with positive influence come back, you know, and into the community and set their light on kids' lives.
We're talking to Dwayne Harris from the Dallas Cowboys, and basically you are definitely giving back in two different ways. One of the things you're doing is on a regular basis is being a volunteer as a guest reader in multiple schools in Dallas. Tell us about those experiences.
One experience was I did a thing with Project Transformation, like it's a nonprofit organization out here in Dallas. It's a big nonprofit organization out here in Dallas. I did a lot of work with them, and Now, the first time I worked with them, the kids actually read to me. If they're doing a program where the kids actually read to the adult, you know, and it's an adult reading to the kids, so that way they get familiar with reading and understand the words. So that was pretty cool. I really enjoyed that, you know, and I got to read with them, and they got to read to me, and I got to read to them. So it was definitely fun. I had a great time doing that with them.
What age kids were you reading to, Dwayne?
I think it was all ages. I think the youngest was like 5, maybe, and then I think the oldest was probably 14, maybe. So it was like a wide range group of kids, man. But it was just fun. It was just so amazing to see the kids' faces, you know, just be able to read to me, you know, and be read to them. It was amazing. I just love those type of experiences when I get to go out into the community and do stuff for the kids. That was just their face expression, and it was just. When they see me, and I'm feeling the same way when I see them.
You can't imagine, Dwayne, if you would have had those experiences growing up, an NFL athlete right next to you like that. How you're going to make a difference in so many kids' lives by showing them the importance of reading, but also giving back.
It's just that experience. You know, people don't get to meet guys like me. You know, they only see us on TV or they read about us or they just see us passing through the streets. You know, when you get to have that one-on-one, I guess, experience with somebody you've always seen on TV or you've looked up to or just somebody who does what you wanted to do, it gives you that boost of motivation of, you know what, I can do this. You know, I've seen what he's done. I've seen his background and where he came from. You know, and it's nothing not to have it easy, but, you know, you can still do it. You know, it gives those kids that motivation. And for me, it just gives me that inner child in me, because I never want to grow up. I'm always a big kid. Anybody who ever known me, I'm always playing around. I'm always joking. And when I get around kids, I get to have fun. I get to be myself and just be a kid again.
That's so key, to be a kid again. And to say to yourself, wow, I remember when I was that age. And what can you give us one experience when you were reading those kids? One interesting story or something from that those experiences with Project Transformation?
Yeah, definitely. You know, we go in, I read to them, you know, and or they read to me, you know, and they love to ask me questions, and I always get some of the randomest questions ever, you know. And one of the kids had asked me, "Have I ever talked to one of the Dallas churches?" it was just a random question, you know. And it's just funny because I love when they ask me random questions, because, you know, kids they never get to ask people like us questions, so I let them ask whatever they want to, and whatever questions come to their head, and it's just fun, and it's just an exciting time for me, because I never know what's going to happen. I'm always on my toes, and it's always a good laugh at the end.
And especially think about Dallas, Dwayne, and the Cowboys. They're America's team, but they're definitely Dallas's team. Those kids to get to meet a Cowboy, it's absolutely amazing. And I guess to represent the Cowboys organization with Project Transformation must be fantastic as well.
Oh, definitely. Just being on America's team, you know, is a blessing, because, you know, when you go into the communities, the kids, you know, they love it because they love Dallas Cowboys football. And if they don't, they'll learn to love it because they get around me and they just have so much fun. They're like, oh, he's so cool. You know, and I just be around them. I'm like, y'all cool. I like being around y'all more than y'all like being around me. So it just evens out, and it's just a great time for everybody. And it's always just fun, man. Just playing this game and giving back to the community and just seeing the kids' faces and smiles is amazing.
And do you get questions about football as well from the kids about what's going to happen this year, Dwayne, and things like that, or what happened last year? Because I'm sure you do.
Yeah, the kids, you know, you never know what they're going to ask. You know, the most common question I always get is, do you like Tony Romo? I always get that question every time, you know, and they love asking that question. I don't know why, but, you know, they ask me something like everything. They ask me, do I know Miles? I'm like, yeah, no, he cool. Or do I know these people? Or do I hang around them? Or what is this guy like? You know, they ask me how many touchdowns I ever scored in a game. Or, you know, they just ask whatever comes to their mind about whatever. And if it's a football question, there's always something real random. And, you know, I just love it because it just gives kids open up their mind and imagination up to a whole nother level. And it just helps them, it helps me.
And we're talking to Dwayne Harris from the Dallas Cowboys. And I think one thing, Dwayne, even you're bringing out reading as an important part of this whole process, being part of Project Transformation. But the other thing is just volunteering your time for kids that, you know, who knows what their home life's like, to get to meet you can change their day or possibly their life in so many ways, because then they could say, I too could be Dwayne Harris someday. And I think that's just being a role model. Dwayne, I remember when I was a professional wrestler and I would go to schools to do personal appearances before the events at night. They were the best times, because it wasn't about, you know, me being a wrestler. It was more about they're getting to meet a wrestler, and they were getting to talk to them and hang out with them, and the experience, their eyes light up. And I'm sure that's something that's going to live with you for the rest of your life, for sure.
Oh, yeah, most definitely. You know, the experience of just being with them and just being around them is just so much fun, because they get attached to you, they hold on to you, they walk around with you all day. You know, the excitement of them just being around you is amazing.
Okay, so, Dwayne, do we have a website we can find information on Project Transformation? Then I also want to know where we can find information on you as well, Dwayne.
Yeah, you can definitely, it's projecttransformation.org. at their website, and if you want to find information on me, I have my own website on DwayneHarris17.com. If you want to find out any information on me, so you can just hit me on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, all my social media.
You know how important social media is, and Dwayne, especially you see some of these NFL players that are not on it as hard, and you're like, you're missing out. You get your chance to connect with your fans, especially through social media, don't you?
Yeah, definitely. Anytime I get a chance to talk to the fans, it's always good because those are the people who support my career, and those are the people who support me throughout whatever's going on in my life. And they just love, you know, being a part of Dwayne.
Do you ever see yourself starting a foundation, Dwayne? Seems like with what you're doing with Project Transformation, that might be an idea sometime for you, it seems like.
I wouldn't say I want to do my own foundation because I like to work around a lot of stuff. I like to do stuff with different foundations and different things, like just stuff with YMCA, Project Transformation, and I do stuff in the community. It's just different stuff, you know. And I like to bounce around to different things, so I don't know if I have my own foundation yet. I'm probably gonna get one, but right now I'm just freelance. Yeah, I will just